Welcome to Fitness Disrupted, a production of iHeartRadio. I am Tom Holland, and this is Fitness Disrupted. My sports psychology professor would say, if you want to know your weakness, just ask your competition. I know my weaknesses. I would argue many fitness professionals claim to be perfect and put out that perfection on social media. I know what I'm lacking. And one of those things is sleep. I have been manic to a degree, story for another day, but I've gotten better over the years is what I'm trying to say. When I was younger, I didn't sleep a lot. Too much to do, especially when you are an entrepreneur, when you are working for yourself, when you have to hustle, not a lot of time to sleep. And back when I was a trainer, holy cow, was I working crazy hours because you have your clientele that starts at 5 a.m., sometimes earlier, but generally gyms open at 5 a.m. You got your 24-hour gyms now. Not so much back when I first started, but you had private clients who would start earlier sometimes. But let's call it 5 a.m., 5 a.m. to 10 a.m., 11 a.m. if you're, you know, in the cities, whatever. That's the prime time. And then 5 p.m. to 10, 11 p.m. again. And then if you're an entrepreneur, you got to fill in that dead time in between and then after. So long story short, that's one of my excuses for not getting a lot of sleep. And it's an excuse because then when I wasn't doing that, I was still staying up late. And to this day, I generally go to bed late and wake up early. And that is problematic. I know it is. I know the physiology. I know that rest is super important, but that's a struggle. It's a mental and a physical and a behavioral struggle that I have. It's one of my top three weaknesses when it comes to my health and wellness. Fully aware, fully honest about that. And I'm working on it. And when I really train hard for an event, Ironman, back in the day, marathons, ultra marathons, you know, I was going faster when I was younger, and then it was more to just participate over the past decade or so, but now getting back into the trying to go fast phase. And there's a lot of workouts, and I need to sleep. And this podcast is all about us, myself included, living our best lives. And so to do that, one of the first things we have to do is be honest about what our weaknesses are, what we need to improve. And so I do this podcast with mixed emotions because I know that I need to improve this dramatically. And it's easy to avoid. Approach avoidance, right? So we can just avoid our weaknesses, our issues. You know, I come from Catholic family, Irish Catholic. If you avoid it, if you don't say it exists, it doesn't exist. Put your head in the ground. That's how I was raised. But this has been a topic I have been waiting to do because it is so important. And I'm working hard to improve it. And I have one of the preeminent sleep experts to make me feel guilty and make me better. All right? So, coming up very shortly, Dr. Linnell Schneeberg, all right? Met her recently at an event for my literary agent. We share the same one, had not met her till this event. When she told me what she did, felt very guilty and said, I got to have you on. And she is a psych D. She is a fellow of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. She is an assistant professor at the Yale School of Medicine. She is a licensed clinical psychologist. She is the author of Become Your Child's Sleep Coach, The Bedtime Doctor's Five-Step Guide, ages 3 to 10. So, you know, she saw that most books, just about all of them when it comes to kids, are infants. And so she filled that gap with the age group of 3 to 10. But she also can help us, you know, us who are sleep deprived as adults. And if you are a parent, she can help as well. But obviously, many of the same topics and tips that she will give apply to all of us. And her practice focuses on helping parents teach their preschool and elementary school children to be great sleepers using, and I love this, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia to help adolescents and adults sleep well. So, after the break, we're going to hear from Dr. Linnell Schneeberg. Again, going to admit my weaknesses, and she's going to help. She's going to give us the physiology, the psychology, and why it is so important for our health and wellness that we get sleep. All right, quick break. We'll be right back. And we are back. As I said in the intro, I'm a little stressed about this interview because, as I said in the intro, it's my weakness. And a big part of us living our best lives is admitting to, first understanding and seeing what our weaknesses are. And I know full well that this is one of mine. And when Dr. Linnell Schneeberg and I first met, which was not too long ago, this is exactly what we talked about. So, Dr. Schneeberg, thank you so much for coming on and again, making me feel guilty.
Well, I hope to end with you feeling much better about how you can improve your sleep. And thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. You know, you have done it all, especially when you focus on kids. I mean, I think sleep is probably hard enough, especially from the cognitive behavioral side. But, you know, getting parents and kids to get on the same page with this, that's got to be a challenging endeavor.
It is hard. You're right. It's one of the things that people struggle with so much is making sure that everyone in their household is sleeping well, right?
Yeah. And what I love about this topic is, you know, we're being sold so much stuff, right? The fitness tech and all of these different potions and products and things. And at the end of the day, like, sleep is something that I know and you know we need and we need to do better. But it really doesn't cost anything if we kind of figure out these tips and techniques that you're going to talk about and different behaviors and stuff like that. But it's a huge part of our lives and we all need to get that under control. And, you know, there's so many different ways that, you know, we're prevented from having that. Let me start with my first question that I know I get a lot and I'm sure you do too. Is there a perfect number of hours of sleep for everyone?
There is not. And I get that question so often that I have a little graphic that I usually throw up on a screen if I'm working with somebody, and we can put it in your show notes if you like. But sleep is on a bell curve, like everything else is on a bell curve, right? Some people need a low amount, some people need a high amount, and most people are in the middle, you know, at the peak of that bell. And so the lowest number that people ever need is somewhere around 5 hours, and that's really rare. And the most they ever seem to need is around 9 hours. Again, rare, except for teenagers need about 9 hours, actually. But most of us need 6, 7, or 8, with probably 7, 7.5 being the most common number, not really the 8 that we all hear about so much in the news, right? So the way that I ask people to think about their sleep is, do you wake up in the morning without an alarm? And do you have enough energy to run your day?
And I hope that I'm that 5 hour exception to the rule, you know, and I love that. And you know what I have said that every single guest I have had on at some point when I ask a question like that, Dr. Schneeberg says it depends. And that, like, it, that's life, right? Is that it's so rarely black and white. There's science, but it depends, right?
It does depend. But usually through your middle adult years, right, after your 20s, let's say after your mid-20s, until about your 50s, you do tend to need about the same amount each night. And most people kind of know what that number is because they feel good when they get it. And again, they don't, you know, they don't really have to hit the snooze alarm 7 times, and they don't really have to nap for any long period outside of a power nap. But that's when you know you're really in the zone,
And since you just hit on it, let's get to it. I am a huge napper. When I first got my office years ago, I was so excited because it was one of these places that the furniture came with the office and there was a huge couch. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be where I take my naps. You know, it's out of the house. So what is the research tell people on naps?
Naps are great. And a lot of people think naps, quote unquote, ruin your night's sleep, but they absolutely don't. Matter of fact, we are built to take a nap because we know this, because we measure people's melatonin over the 24-hour cycle, right? And we get a big burst of melatonin in the evening. Everyone knows that. And that triggers your brain that it's time to sleep. And then the melatonin really recedes in the early morning hours. But then we get another little bump of it or just after lunch. And so it's almost as though the body expects and wants a nap. And we all know some cultures build that in, right? The siesta into their day. And so my own takeaway about naps is that it's fine to take one every day. I'm a big fan of a power nap, meaning somewhere around the 30-minute mark or less. I myself can often fall asleep for 5 or 10 minutes, and that's enough. And you want your nap to fall between noonish and 4-ish. If you're sort of a, let's say you sleep from 10 or 11 to 6 or 7, you would expect the nap to be a few hours after that, right? About 6 hours after that or more. And you would take that between 12 and 4, that power nap. And oftentimes you'll feel amazingly restored after that. And your nighttime sleep, your bedtime will be just where it should be. It doesn't ruin a thing.
It's great to hear. I have to have my wife listen to this because she is, she's someone who's like, really, you're taking a nap? And I'm like, I'm not built like you. You know, she's someone who just goes nonstop, crazy TV producer. And that's what I have read. And what I love is I say to my iPhone, I lie down on my couch in the office and I say, Siri, wake me up in a half an hour. And it's
perfect.
Like, right? And I love to hear that that's what you, because that's what I've read too, right around a half hour. You don't want to go too much longer than that for most people, right? It can be problematic.
That's right. You'll go into what's called sleep inertia, which means when you wake up, you'll feel too tired. You'll feel draggier than when you went to sleep. But those short naps are amazing. I take them myself. I take them every day if I can. And I too, pre-COVID, right? I had an office and it had a recliner.
Makes me happy, right? Just thinking about it. I love my naps, exactly. Right?
Exactly. And I would put a little sign on my door that said, on a conference call, or
yes.
Something.
Yes. Yeah. So my office is also my podcast studio, and I have a sign that says recording, and that's exactly. Either when I'm recording or when I'm sleeping. It's one or the other, right? You hit on it. This is so simple. We're just going to go from topic to topic. Melatonin great. As a supplement. What are your thoughts and what's the research on that?
Yeah. So this is what I always say. Melatonin, right? It isn't a controlled substance. It isn't heroin, right? But it also isn't the answer usually. And I'll tell you why. Most people who have insomnia, they think, well, I'll just take something for that, right? I'll take an Ambien. I'll take a melatonin. I'll take, who knows, right? Tylenol PM. But what they haven't done is they really haven't built good sleep skills. And so the melatonin becomes a bit of a Band-Aid, if you will. Right? You haven't really done the work to improve the way that you sleep, your sleep habits, your sleep hygiene, your sleep skills. And so to me, melatonin just sort of obscures the picture. And I would rather, like anything else, fix it from the source than to put a Band-Aid on it.
I love that because it goes to like supplements, when it comes to sports or even diet, right? It's a supplement. And as you said, if it doesn't hurt you, okay. If it's not super expensive, you're not wasting your money, okay. But it doesn't fill, it's to supplement things that we're not doing, right? So, I love that. It can help maybe, right? but we need to fix the other things, right?
Yeah, but it's often not the answer. The most common sentence I hear is, I tried melatonin and it didn't work.
Oh, yeah. That would never work for me. I'm quite sure, I need my naps and I need to sleep more. Let's get to, obviously, one of my favorite topics. And I know you just discussed this with one of my favorite people, Matt Fitzgerald, exercise. What I love to talk about on Fitness Disrupted is all the benefits of exercise that are not the scale, that is not weight loss. And one is sleep. So can you talk about that, sleep and exercise?
Sure. So exercise is fantastic for sleep. And it's fantastic for sleep for two really important reasons. It manages your stress, right? If you're exercising, your stress levels are lower and it's easier to fall asleep, number one. And number two, when you're exercising, it fatigues you and there's some muscle repair that needs to be done and your body sort of can't wait to get to sleep and do that. So sleep is wonderful for exercise. The only caveat I would put out there is that it's better to be finished with your exercise by about 3 hours before your actual bedtime.
You are just hitting on every question I have. So that was one. I was one of those. It has changed over time. You know, that's a common question I will get. Dr. Schneeberg, is what's the best time to exercise? And my answer obviously is whenever you can. When I was in high school, I would, again, because I'm somewhat, you know, not insomniac, but I didn't need even a lot of sleep back then. I was exercising, lifting weights at 11 o'clock at night, but I was a teenager. It worked for me. So it depends. I'm not doing that today, right? So we change over time. So again, it's what works for you. I mean, most people or many people, they'll get, it will be harder for them to fall asleep, right? If they exercise so close to bedtime, but not everyone, more people than not, right?
Everyone, and you're so right that the best time to exercise is when you're actually going to do it. You know, I'm a behaviorist, right? I'm a sleep behaviorist. And so I care about what works. And if you can go to the gym after dinner and then go home and fall asleep just fine, great. Who cares? Right.
And that's what I love about your approach, because I'm a huge believer in practice or, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy. Let's change behaviors. Let's figure out what works for us. Doesn't matter what science says if we can't do it. Right. If I said pea protein is the greatest protein to eat, people always say, you know, what's the greatest protein? I say, just get your protein in, you know, start there. That's all second, third level stuff to me, because in a real world, how do we find that? So, let's change our behaviors in a way that works for us. Right. With all of the stuff we're talking about.
Absolutely.
What was I going to hit on? So many questions. Talk about, you know, so many people put stress on themselves. I used to do this. I remember when I was a kid, I had sleep problems. Part of that was I grew up with, you know, five brothers in a crazy Irish Catholic family. But when we're anxious and we try, when we think about it, it becomes harder and harder. And one great study that you've referenced in the past is the cash prize study. Tell people about that.
I love the cash prize study, right? So what they did was they took really great sleepers, they put them in a sleep center and they wired them up, you know, to know exactly when they had fallen asleep. And they said, the first one of you great sleepers to fall asleep gets cash. And you can imagine none of them could fall asleep because sleep is one of those things you kind of can't make it happen, right? And so the most important thing about that is to know that you really just want to have your routine and your schedule pretty consistent. You want to make it more likely that you would fall asleep, but not try to force it.
And one topic I've heard you talk about that I love, and I think people will be surprised at, what is more important? I mean, it's all these things are important, but is it what time you go to bed or what time you wake up that you should focus on maybe to start, or just talk about the differences?
Sure. So the rise time is the bus driver, right? The rise time is the anchor of the day. And it's the one thing that you have more control about. We just talked about the fact that you can't necessarily make yourself fall asleep at a certain time. Sleep is a little bit like a butterfly. I always say it has to land on you, right? You can't make a butterfly land on you. You can make it likely that it might, right? By doing some things like we've discussed, consistent bedtimes and rise times. But your rise time is the thing that you have the most control about. And your rise time is important because it's the time of the day when you're likely going to get some sunlight exposure, which sort of starts your clock and tells your brain what time your bedtime should be. Your brain does a little countdown when it first, you know, notices light coming in, and then it counts off when it thinks your bedtime should be. And so I'm really a big fan of a consistent rise time above all else.
I think that's so helpful for people. I know it is for me. And I love what you said about, you know, exercise and fatigue. This is where it's commonsensical and simple to some degree, I would argue. You know, the first chapter of my most recent book is a client, super successful tennis player, squash player in his 60s. And, you know, his story was when he really started focusing on playing tennis and doing the things he loved, he drank less, he went to bed earlier and got up earlier, right? Because it just, it's all connected, right? He's like, I'm too tired to stay up late. I'm too tired to drink, you know, 3 glasses of wine. He still does some of those things, but less. And the body tells you what to do, right? Especially when it comes to sleep.
You're so right. It's so interconnected, right? Light exposure, meals, sunlight, sleep, all those things, exercise, they're all so interconnected. And when you start practicing better habits in some areas, the other ones come along for the ride. It's great.
And I think, I know that that's not talked about enough, right? It's, we always pull these things out. Like, is it exercise? Is it nutrition? It's all connected. And all these behaviors, as small as people think they are, like I only did this, I always say take the word only out, or I just walked a mile. All of those things add up and they're doable, you know, from the behavioral side, right? So when you make, again, these seemingly small changes when it comes to all the behaviors you're talking about, they're not small. That's how it works.
Yeah, they're cumulative. Isn't that a good word? They really do. They add up together to make a lovely change for people.
And speaking of cumulative, can you catch up on your sleep? So in other words, common question, and I used to think the answer is yes, but tell them the research.
Yeah, I love that question. Here in a nutshell is the answer. You can catch up, but your body does it for you. And here's how. Let's say there are 4 kinds of sleep, which there are. And for simplicity, I'm going to call them light sleep, medium sleep, deep sleep, and dream sleep. Dream sleep is also called REM sleep, right? Rapid eye movement sleep. And the percentages that you would obtain normally of those 4 kinds of sleep go as follows. About 5% of your sleep would be light, about 50% would be medium, and about 20-ish would be deep, and about 20-ish would be REM or dream sleep, right? So if you've had a bad night of sleep, your body says, uh-oh, Tom's a little short on his sleep. I think I'm going to steal some of his light and medium sleep tonight, and I'm going to make sure he gets more deep sleep and dream sleep. And your body will do that until you're caught up on your percentages without you doing a thing, least of all sleeping in for 3 more hours on a, you know, on the weekend. Your body's already done it. Your body's already done this amazing thing of catching up on its own.
Isn't that amazing? The body, you know, never ceases to amaze me at how smart and adaptive it is. We can beat the heck out of it in so many different ways, right? So I think the short answer is kind of no, right? Yes, but no.
Keep your schedule the same, right? And let your body do its work.
Right. Do you think, is there a big difference or is it still the number of hours? Like if you get 5 hours from 1 a.m. till, you know, 6 a.m. or from 9, you know, does it matter what time before midnight maybe you go to bed or is it just the hours?
It's really just the hours as long as they're consistent when they fall, right? So if you were to tell me, hey, I'm a night owl and I always get my 6 hours from 1 to 7, great, that's fine. We have what's called a chronotype, right? We're either sort of a lark or sort of an owl. Everybody knows a night person. Everybody knows a morning person. And so they would tell you that their sleep is better if they sleep, you know, at their preferred time. And I agree with that. But when it actually falls for any given person is such a personal preference. And there is not necessarily a better or worse time.
My wife and I are totally opposite, which, you know, I think works and doesn't. It's a constant. You know, she'll always say, Dr. Schneeberg, that she'll say, I didn't sleep at all last night. She has never once gotten up in the middle of the night. Like, she sleeps like a rock. But, you know, to her, it's totally different. And she needs a lot more than I do. But again, it depends. And we're different. What do you think about, because they're everywhere. I'm sent these all the time, all the different sleep trackers out there. What's your feeling on them or experience with them?
Well, I'm going to tell you about what we joke about amongst ourselves as sleep professionals. We'll say something like this. If the patient comes in with one of them and they say, hey, doc, what do you think about my so-and-so watch? I'll say, well, does it make you feel really good about your sleep? And they'll say, yeah, I get these really high scores. It's amazing. I'll say, well, they are great then. And isn't that wonderful that your sleep is so good? Okay. And then if I ask the same question, they say, no, I'm getting these horrible scores, even though I'm sleeping 7 hours and I feel pretty good in the daytime, but this thing is telling me that I'm a bad sleeper. And I'll say, oh, those things are terrible. They're not very reliable. Don't worry about it. You know, what we care about again is to wake up feeling rested pretty much without an alarm. That's my tracker, right? That's what I want to know. But truth be told, they are not very accurate. I listened to a long interview with the CEO, I think it was, of Fitbit even. And he said, listen, they're interesting. They give you a lot of fun data. But if you really want to know the actual kind of sleep you're getting and how much you're getting, you need to have an in-lab sleep study. That's the gold standard. And even he would, of course, admit that, right?
Oh my gosh, I love that you put that out there because, again, I've tried them all. They don't, you know, one you mentioned and some other super popular ones. And at the end of the day, it comes down to what you said. It's how do you feel, right? And I was the latter in the group that, like, I knew before I put any of these on that it was going to tell me I didn't get a lot of, I know when I go to bed and I know when I wake up, right? That's truly all the information I need and how I feel at the end of it. So it was a stressor on me. For sure.
Correct.
Right. So I took it off and I was like, I don't need this. I know what my habits are. So it's fun.
Yeah, don't wear it.
Yeah.
They have their place. I might use them on a young child who isn't very good at tracking. I might use it on maybe an older person who doesn't want to keep a log. You know, they have their place for collecting data, but they are not the be all and end all. And they certainly are not sophisticated enough to track deep sleep, dream sleep. You know, they're just not. They're measuring motion and your heart rate. That's really about it.
Right. And as you said, like you see these intricate graphs and things like that, and you're going, probably not, right? And so I love that you put that out there. It's a fun tool. But as you're saying, at the end of the day, it's, does it make you feel good about yourself? Does it get you to bed? Do you feel rested? All the other stuff. If it's telling you, I know that my watch that's sophisticated will tell me I'm overtraining when I know I'm not and undertraining when I know I am. So we have to be so careful about this fitness technology, right? You got to go by how you feel.
Yes.
And that's, you know, it's tough to put out there because we have all of this technology, but what is it really doing? What else do I want to ask you about? So much. Just give the tips, like, you know, whether it's, let's start with adults. So many people have heard them, but I think they need to hear them again. Or for the people who haven't, give like your top tips to getting the best sleep for someone like me, who's still struggling.
Absolutely. So allotting enough time for sleep, because sleep is important. You know, and there was a time when it was sort of like, oh, sleep is for sissies. Remember that? Where, you know, sleep, nobody needs it.
Sure.
Who needs it? And that's shifted. People certainly see the value of sleep these days, which is wonderful. So allotting enough time for sleep and not seeing it as a waste of time, number one. Number two, keeping a really consistent sleep schedule at the time that fits your lifestyle and your biological preferences, right? Same bedtime, same rise time, 7 days a week, as much as you can do that. And number three, having a way to quiet your mind down, both at bedtime and in the middle of the night during an awakening. So everybody wakes up 2 to 6 times a night. That is normal. That is just what humans and animals do. We all wake up briefly a few times a night. Maybe it was adaptive back in the cave days. Who knows? But we do it. We usually wake up at the end of a sleep cycle. And that's not a problem for good sleepers. They barely notice that they're waking and they go right back to sleep. But someone who's struggling with their sleep, they'll wake up and do all the thoughts will start to cascade down. Why am I awake? I wonder how long I'll be awake. How long have I been asleep? How long is it until my alarm goes off? And they'll start doing all this math right in their head. And then they might start doing a download of things that are going on in their lives or what they have to do tomorrow. And all of a sudden they're wide awake. So it's really important to know how to shut that off and how to quiet your mind down. Again, both at bedtime, you know, when things get quiet and we go to bed, sometimes those thoughts creep up. So at bedtime and in the middle of the night, it's important to know how to quiet that down.
And when you're really tired from exercise and moving all day long, it makes it exponentially easier, as we said, right? Which is just so great to what you said from the anxiety and the stress levels that, so you're fatigued physiologically and psychologically too, which is a positive thing. I love the extremes. I took a course not too long ago in brain and behavior in the extremes, and it was a NASA scientist who taught this. And, you know, we went to the topic of the International Space Station. If you really want to understand, right, how things work, you look at the extremes. And it was so interesting to me, Dr. Schneeberg, that, you know, it's what, 45 minutes of light, 45 minutes of dark. And that's a huge problem to show how important sleep is with those astronauts, that they have to figure out how to get the normal circadian rhythm on track.
They do. It's tricky.
It's so tricky. And it just shows that, like, you know, we need sleep, as we've been talking about. I know that I need to get more. It depends. I love that we've hit on all of these top topics, you know, with the fit tech and things like that. I did stand-up comedy way back when, and one of my jokes was with sleep. And I should ask you, so what's the line that if you die in your sleep, you die in real life, right? Have you ever heard that? Have you heard that?
Yes. People say that. But you don't, of course.
Well, no, I would say the only person that I know that could have had this dream was Jesus. And I don't ever remember reading about this in the Bible. So I'm not sure where that ever came from, but I'm glad that you heard it as well, right? Let's talk about kids real quickly. I know that I've got a teenager and one just about to become one, and I struggle, you know, pulling the phone out of his bed, pulling his laptop from under the bed. We need a technology. This is like a huge detriment to our sleep.
Definitely. So let's talk about that. So blue light, you know, or no blue light. Okay. That's its own thing. You can shut off blue light now. Everyone knows how to put your devices into the night shift mode. But the real issue to me is the stimulating nature of it. And the fact that we have this Pavlovian response to the notification sound. Right. So you can be drifting off to sleep. And if you hear that sound, you want to go, see, what is that? Right. You'll pop back up out of sleep to go see what that is. And so we, even as adults, have a hard time shutting that stuff off. So how do we expect, you know, like you said, preteens or teens to do it? It's really hard for them. And so I think we have to play that leadership role as parents, you know, and take the devices and have them charged somewhere in maybe the main part of the house, or at least, you know, out in the hallway, or in some way that makes it easier for them to turn them off and let go of them, so to speak. And one thing I'll say to parents that sometimes will change, you know, motivate them, let me put it that way. And listen, if your son or daughter has their phone in their bedroom, everyone has access to them. Cyberbullies have access to them. People you don't want to have access to your children, you're allowing that access right through the phone. Why do you want to do that? In their most, really, how shall I put it? Their most relaxing space, sacred space, really, their most comfortable, calm space. You really don't want that to be the place where anybody has access to your child.
And I found exactly what you said, that I can't even, you know, put it across the room. It has to go on in another room and ideally like another floor, right? Just keep it out of arm's reach. They'll get up and go grab it. So yeah, you know, this is one place I would agree and argue that we need to really just, you know, take it away and take it away early, yeah, as you said, right? So they can quiet their minds and not have that distraction, which is just not good.
And even just as adults do, I'm not saying that I don't want your child to have something at the bedside to look at or do or relax with. I'm a big fan of that. I'm a huge fan of reading lights and books or puzzle books or drawing books or, you know, the really new complicated coloring books or anything. None of us, well, most of us cannot just lay down and boom, we're out like a light. Most of us need a little bit of transition time. And I am a big fan of having those things at the bedside, just as long as they're not electronic. Or even a Kindle type of an e-reader with that non-blue light. You know, the paper white, for example, has a really lovely background that isn't blue light. So I do love everyone to have some quiet, distracting activity ready for those times that we talked about a few moments ago when you're trying to quiet your mind, both at bedtime or in the night. I think that's really a brilliant strategy.
I know you've talked about that for kids, right? A little like a basket of things, right? Toys and books and the light you're describing. And I would argue we all need that, as you said, right? Adults, kids, as you know, what is it that for you works to help you quiet your mind so that you can sleep? We're all different. And so these are all controllable things. And that's how I end all my podcasts, is talking about let's control what we can, right? So everything we're talking about is so controllable. And when you have an expert like you who can literally help people better their lives with one of the most important things, sleep, you know, these things that sound simple and maybe inconsequential are not, but we just have to do them and do them consistently.
That's exactly right. It's all about that. It's all about that regular practice.
I call it excessive moderation, right? We tend to do a lot of something a little bit, whether it's exercise or these behaviors. And I have found personally and with my clients, and I'm sure you have as well, it's the excessive moderation, doing the little things consistently over time that reap huge rewards. And this will help all of us, again, psychologically as well as physiologically.
Absolutely, 100%.
How can people find out more about you? Because I'm sure people are going to have questions and, you know, so social media, and if they want to work with you directly, how do they find you?
I have a website, first of all, called thebedtimedoctor.com, which is definitely more focused on kids and helping kids become really great sleepers, especially in terms of helping them learn how to self-soothe without so much help from a parent, which is what mostly younger children are struggling with. And then I have on Twitter, I'm Dr. Schneeberg, just DR, right? Dr. Schneeberg. Really on all the socials, it's always Dr. Schneeberg.
And they'll see all that in the show notes as well. I can't thank you enough. I feel better than I thought I would at the end of this. But that's it. You know, again, we all need to focus on those things that we're not great at when it comes to our health. Be honest and then just make those changes over time, those small changes, and do what makes us feel good and utilize those tools and behaviors that get us there, right? And it's going to be different for everyone, but you got to give it time and you have to put it into practice.
Sure do.
Thank you so much. Again, much less painful than I thought. So again, you got to approach your
weakness. Thank you for having me. I love to talk about sleep.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Continued success with all of this stuff. I know that you are making adults and their lives better, both, you know, with their sleep. And there's nothing, I think, more challenging than getting a kid to sleep and having that be an issue. So, that's tough, as we started by saying. So thank you, and I look forward to speaking again.
Thank you so much.
All right, and we will be right back after this quick break. And we are back. I want to thank Dr. Linnell Schneeberg for taking the time. As I said, I was a little stressed, and you know, if you've listened to my prior podcast, my thoughts and approach and feelings and research into stress, it's a choice, but that's a good thing, right? The approach avoidance, we tend to, depends on your personality type, but, you know, human beings avoid pain and seek pleasure, Freud, right? And we also avoid things that we need to face head on. And for me, this is something I'm working on. It's a work in progress. And I'm not going to suddenly start sleeping 7-8 hours every night. It's just not going to happen. And, you know, it's just not going to happen. But I can always be better. And that's what we need to focus on, is not being perfect, is making those small changes over time that Dr. Schneeberg and I talked about, controlling what we can. And you need the information first, the correct information on what to control, how to control it. And, you know, we didn't go into all of the other tools and products and, you know, potions that are pitched to you to help you sleep. If it works, good for you. I will never discount the placebo effect or what works for you. As we talked about at the beginning of the show, it depends. And far too often you're told by these quote unquote experts, this is the one way that this works. And then you get frustrated and depressed when it doesn't work for you because you feel like you did something wrong or you're different. You're, you know, not normal, whatever it may be. And it's just not the science. But first and foremost, we have to control the behaviors. And I'm annoyed. I forgot one of my final questions to her was about breakfast, because I know she talks about how breakfast affects sleep. How does that make sense? I have to have her back on to talk about that. So it's what works for you. But you control what you can. How you go to bed at night, right? Stuff you hear all the time. Keep it dark. Keep it somewhat cool. Of course, if you're my wife, she has 9 blankets and a heating blanket. So that's an issue for me, but it's what works for her. But you control what you can. And one of the most powerful sleep aids is exercise. And it's counterintuitive. Getting up a few minutes early to exercise will help you sleep, not make you more tired. You don't have to get up an hour early. You can get up 30 minutes. You can get up 10 minutes and do something. And it not only helps your sleep, it sets your entire day up cognitively and physiologically for success. I digress, but not really. So this is yet another example of the benefits of exercise that far exceed pure weight loss. Exercise, stress reduction, quieting your mind, tiring you out, better sleep, better everything. Again, I want to thank Dr. Linnell Schneeberg. Google her, reach out to her if you have questions about your sleep, about your kids' sleep. Again, she specializes in ages 3 to 10. That's her book, Become Your Child Sleep Coach, The Bedtime Doctor's Five-Step Guide. Get your information from the best people so you can stop wasting your time and money. It's really important. And so when you take all of these tips and behavioral changes into account and start to employ them, you don't have to do them all at the same time. You shouldn't. Slowly see the changes and see what works for you. All right. Sleep 101. I'm going to take a nap. Actually, I already did. Took one before the show. Short one. Not my full 30 minutes, but I got what I needed. All right. Again, thank you to Dr. Schneeberg. Thank you for listening. If you want to reach out, questions, comments, Tom H. Fit is Twitter. Tom H. Fit is Instagram. You can direct message me there. Fitnessdisrupted.com. You can email me through the site. And finally, by the way, redoing my website. I've done my own website for well over a decade. actually, well over 2 decades now that I think about it. And I'm finally pushing it off. I'm finally, again, changing my behaviors. And so look for a new website soon with lots of content, lots of stuff about this show as well. But I love to hear from you. And again, my most recent book is The Micro Workout Plan. You can grab that anywhere you buy books, Amazon. And finally, follow the show, rate the show, comment if you can. And I truly thank you for listening. I'm going to bring you the best information, the best guests, so that you can live the best life. I am Tom Holland. This is Fitness Disrupted. Believe in yourself. Fitness Disrupted is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.